Do not let your hearts be troubled or afraid. Dear brothers and sisters, the Holy Spirit is with you.
I'm Kathleen McCarthy, and you're listening to What the World Needs Now, empowered by the Holy Spirit, bringing the fire of God's love to the world. I invite you to join me in this hour of God's healing power. Call and join us in conversation and prayer. Remember, what the world needs now is God, and God is love. Well, welcome once again to What the World Needs Now. This is Kathleen McCarthy, and it's a blessing and a privilege to be with you over the airwaves. I just want to remind everybody this beautiful gift we have here to walk our Lenten journey these last few days into coming into the Triduum, and I just am so blessed. I say it all the time. I'm so blessed and so grateful to have this medium to bring you some of the most interesting stories on Wednesdays. And we have a beautiful story today. And, you know, here we are in Holy Week. And this story is about a woman that had great faith, tremendous faith. And we have Father Blaine Berkey on the line. He is from Denver, Colorado. And Father, are you with us?
I'm there.
Before, publicly, I'd like to say this, before we go any further about the story we're going to talk about today, I know with you, you would also thank him for the gift of his priesthood, because 55 years he's been ordained a priest, and he's a Franciscan Capuchin, and actually our own Archbishop Charles was his provincial at one time. So we're blessed to have you with us, Father.
Well, thank you.
We're going to talk a little bit about the Julia Greeley Guild, and a lot of our listeners may not know about her. I remember quite time back, I guess it was on Black History Month, I remember hearing about her and what a remarkable human being she was. And so I'm delighted to have somebody that really knows all about her life, knows about the guild. And so I'm going to invite you to share with our listeners today about this beautiful woman who was actually a slave. Is that correct?
Yeah, she was born a slave. Somewhere in Missouri, probably around Hannibal, and she didn't know when. They asked her one time when how old she was, and she says, "I don't know. They never told me." But when she died, they had about five or six different ages for her, stretching anywhere from 65 to 85. Nobody knew how old she was exactly when she was born, but she grew up in the fields of Missouri, and while she was there, she was sick one day and was forced to stay at home, and her mother stayed home with her, and the slave master was upset about that, and he came up with a whip to beat the mother, and the lash of the whip caught Julia's eye, and she was blind in her one eye the rest of her life.
About how old was she then, Father?
Just we don't have a lot of precise information.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because she didn't know how old she was. That's right.
You introduced me as saying, I know all about her. there are so many things I'd like to know but that we don't know.
Right.
She was emancipated, though, during Lincoln's time, and she settled in St. Louis for a while. She worked for a doctor and his family there in St. Louis for about 9 years or so. And then the doctor's sister-in-law had married the first territorial governor of Colorado. And Julia had somebody write to her and ask if maybe she could come out here and work for her, which she did for a couple of years. The territorial governor was another curmudgeon, really, and she eventually left their employment. He had blackballed her, so she had a heck of a time trying to find and work. A lot of people did hire her to take care of their kids, to mop their floors, to do all sorts of menial work. But free time she had and whatever money she had left from taking care of herself, she spent on taking care of the poor of the area just north of what's now downtown Denver. Sacred Heart Parish had just started just a few months before she entered the church. And she was very faithful to that parish the rest of her life and involved in every aspect of the work of the church. And somebody described her as a one-person St. Vincent de Paul Society.
Yeah.
And others have called her the forerunner of Catholic Charities. And she just did an awful lot of this at night because she was a predominantly white neighborhood. These people she was taking care of were white, and she didn't want to embarrass them by coming to the front door a load of fuel or clothing or whatever, so she did it at night, going around through back alleys.
What an incredible woman. From everything I've read, she was extremely poor herself.
Yes.
And she originally started reaching out to people who needed food and clothing, anything she could do out of her own means, and then it got so great that she started begging on the streets, not for herself, but for others. What a lesson in humility, and what a lesson of courage.
Well, I mean, and also of forgiveness, because she had been treated rather badly quite a number of times.
Yeah.
This governor that I talked about, after she had been in his employment, he decided to divorce his wife, and he gave something like 25 reasons why he should be divorced from his wife. And one of them was that she had hired this unprincipled, lewd woman, a black woman, to be in his home, and to the detriment of the morality of his children and so forth. Well, actually, Mrs. Gibson's, the woman put, her lawyer put him on the stand and questioned him at some length, and the end of which they said, you really have no reason for saying things like that about her. And, but anyhow, he, as I said, he had was rather influential and had blackballed her among many of the people that it could have helped her a little more. So she had a hard time at the beginning. And even the people in the parish there, some of the women who were a little snooty, came to Mass to listen to the music. And she had rented, they had a pew rent in those days, and she, poor as she was, she had rented a pew right up at the very beginning, the very front of the church off on the left side, right underneath a huge crucifix. And she would come up with her tattered clothing, and she had a limp. I don't know what that was from, but these women did not like to see her up there in the front, and so they complained to the pastor, who said she can sit in any church she wants to.
Praise
in this
God.
Church. And she went to him though and said, you know, I don't have to go to that mass. I can go to another. So he said, you want to go to that mass? You're gonna do it. But there were people just like that, you know. She went on helping people. And this year, well, I'd like to say, first of all, when she died, not so many people knew about this because it had been done in secret, an awful lot of it. But when she died, she had been living in a boarding house, and so the pastor made arrangements to have her laid out in a chapel that the parish had, where they had masses to provide for more than they could get in the church. And they laid her out in that church, and there wasn't any radio or television here at the time, and there wasn't any big article in the paper or anything about her dying. But immediately when she was laid out there, people started coming in from all over, of all walks of life, paying respects to her. They went on all day long. I think maybe 1,000 people or more were at that event. Anyhow, this year the Archdiocese of Denver named her as its model of the Archdiocese model of mercy for the Holy Year.
Wow!
And commissioned an icon to be.
Father Blaine, is someone opened a cause for this beautiful woman?
No, they've been talking about it for almost 100 years.
Wow.
So, actually, no, that is precisely why the guild was organized about 4 or 5 years ago, because people have been talking about it all along throughout the whole time. Shortly before the guild was organized, the Archdiocese had put all of its back issues of its newspaper on the online, so I was able to access that with a search engine and found almost 100 articles written all through the years about her. They'd often talk about, you know, her cause, but the cause had not been opened, and I'm hoping that soon happens. That's why the guild was nice to do what it could do to bring that about. The interestingly, the two past archbishops, Cardinal Stafford, when he came back from Rome the first time, he met with a group of people and was talking to them, and of course of which he said he sure supports the cause of Julia Greeley. And of course there wasn't any cause, and he was the one who opened it. And Archbishop Charles said the same thing before he left here after he'd been named your archbishop. He was here at our house one night, and he said, I sure hope the cause goes forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, you know, there isn't any cause. The cause can only go forward when the archbishop is interested. So I think that the fact that the archdiocese named him, named her the model of mercy for the holy year, I think, shows that they're thinking about this.
Exactly. And, you know, what an inspiration, Father. I mean, her life history, I mean, she fasted constantly from breakfast, unless it was something that would take all her strength to do, she would eat breakfast. But when somebody asked her about that, you know, because by that time, many would have gladly given her a meal, and she said it wasn't from her poverty, it was because Jesus was her nourishment, that was her breakfast. I thought that was quite amazing, you know. She was a very trusting soul, wasn't she? I mean, I know she loved children, and she would always, you know, take care of people's children when they had to go somewhere or go shopping, etc. And one of the things I found very interesting is the very family that that you had referred to, had left her a little bit of money. I guess it was the Gilpins that left them to her. And but she, so much of that small amount of money, I mean, people were frauding her, and, you know.
Actually, that was the story that gone around. There's a number of things that were said about her that really hadn't been checked out.
Oh.
And I found Mrs. Gilpin's will, and she did leave her some money. It wasn't nearly as much as people thought.
Right, it was a small amount.
And it was I can't think what the word is, but it was set up in such a way as if her sister's will had been settled before Mrs. Gilpin died, then whatever was coming to Mrs. Gilpin's estate, she wanted to give some of that to Julia, but actually this other woman had died many years before, and so there really wasn't anything that went to that. But Mrs. Gilpin certainly was interested in her, and she's the one that's credited with leading her into the church.
Yeah, and I think
actually she said one time, she said, somebody asked, you know, about Mrs. Gilpin giving you some money. She said, she gave me a lot more than money. She gave me my faith.
That's beautiful. And to this day, this church there in Denver, the Church of the Sacred Heart, is that the same church that she was laid to rest in for the funeral, and also...
Well, her funeral was in Sacred Heart Church, but her she was laid out in a little chapel, I don't know, maybe about a mile from there, in an area called Five Corners, where they had a little chapel called Loyola Chapel, which they were thinking that on that site they would build Loyola Church, but actually they built it at a different location. And that chapel is still there, but it's now a Protestant church. I don't know the name of it right off.
You know, when you think that her beautiful little soul, her body was laid in state there, the story goes that limousines and giant touring cars came, you know, carrying the rich and the wealthiest, as well as the poor that went to see her. So she, in her life, by just the example she lived of being merciful, giving out of her own need, almost like the widow's mite, when she died, you know, the educated, the uneducated, the wealthy, the poor, everybody was at her funeral. Everybody saw the beautiful soul that she was, and that this is a woman that had tremendous faith. How did she come about being, she too was a third order Franciscan, correct?
Right. I don't know the particulars of that, except that it was at St. Elizabeth's Church here in Denver. Actually, her pastor, or the pastor of that church, who I think or presume it was, would have also been the spiritual assistant of the Third Order at the time.
Mm-hmm.
He was Father Leo Heinrich, who was martyred at the altar, shot while he was giving out communion.
My goodness.
His cause has been opened, but has never gone any further. They've collected the information that's sitting in Rome. He would have died right there and during her lifetime.
Well, I want to tell us a little bit before you go. We have a couple more minutes left. Tell us a little bit about the official website of Julia Greeley's Guild, and that's Greeley, G-R-E-E-L-E-Y.
Right. J-U-L-I-A-G-R-E-E-L-E-Y .org.
Okay. And basically, what is the purpose of the Guild? Is it to finally hope that this cause will be opened?
To make her known further, to bring together the information that had not been brought together, that so that people would know more about her, even those who already were, a number of people devoted to her through the years, but an awful lot of they didn't know about her. We've printed a book which is mentioned on that website, and so how you can get it. And, about $20. It brings together everything we've been able to find about her. Unfortunately, she couldn't read or write, so there's no writings anywhere to read her thought, but her thought can mainly be read in her actions. At the time when the Archdiocese named her the Model of Mercy, I went through the various works of mercy, the traditional ones, found every one of them. There are plenty of examples of it in her life.
Yeah.
The spiritual works of mercy were a little harder to see at first, but while she couldn't read or write, she went all over Denver every month distributing leaflets of the League of the Sacred Heart, the Apostleship of Prayer, and especially to the fire houses of Denver, and but also to many local people, other people. And the only thought that I can come up is that she couldn't read this stuff. But why was she doing it? Because she was comforting the sorrowful, counseling the doubtful, admonishing the sinners by spreading Catholic literature.
You know,
big part of her life.
Yeah. They have that little red wagon, Julia's little red wagon. Is that what she used to cart all the goods she would beg for to take to? Well, I mean, isn't it ironic, Father?
There are several people that mention that, but I've also seen that she sometimes had a gunny sack.
Right.
She was seen carrying a mattress on her back one night. She used whatever means she could, but the red wagon kind of caught our fancy, and that's why we named that our newsletter, The Red Wagon.
Oh, that's your newsletter, too. Well, and apparently you give tours.
I've done a few of that. We've had two bus tours, did about a 25-mile loop to various places where she had been associated with, and also her grave out in Mount Helen, Mount Olivet Cemetery. And one of the places that's really special, I thought, is one of the boarding houses she lived in is still standing. It's an office building now, but we've been able to get into that. That's kind of neat.
Yeah, kind of neat.
She lived there for about 9 years.
Is that where she died?
So the mansions of these, the governor and his wife, they had two different mansions she worked at, and they've been torn down long ago, but this boarding house is still standing there, and the houses of many of the women, people that she visited there in the parish there are still standing.
Oh, well, God has a great sense of justice, doesn't he? I mean, you look at something like that, and here's, I mean, she's like Mother Teresa in so many ways, or like you said, St. Vincent de Paul. But here, you know, just speaking to some of our listeners here, we're all in need of role models all the time. And it just touched my heart. And I've done many of them, many of the causes that have been opened up. We've done a lot of those. And I'm blessed and joyful. And my heart rejoices that, you know, so many of these women and men, and I just did one on a priest a couple months back that was also martyred. And to see the, you know, these Black Americans have so much in their culture that they might not even know about. And I'm delighted to bring to our listeners today, you know, the, what shall I say, the story, as much as we know, on Julia Greeley. And it is through the Julia Greeley Guild, once again, that is trying to make her more known. So maybe you would like to go again to the website. It's Julia, J-U-L-I-A, Greeley, G-R-E-E-L-E-Y, Guild.
Now, there's no guild on it.
I'm reading it off this paper. It's no guild?
Well, Julia Greeley Guild at Gmail or something like that is our email address. But the website is just juliagreeley.org.
Okay. So it's www.juliagreeley.org. Look into it. You might be the very person that could inspire her cause being open. Find out all about her as much as they know. And this is a woman in our day, in our times, in our country, that was a beautiful face of Christ to those who maybe needed to see God with skin on. They looked at her and they saw that out of her own need and out of her heart of mercy, she gave to others, and always sensitive to those who were in need. And yet, in the night, she brought stuff to them so they wouldn't feel indebted to her or embarrassed to take from her who had little. So once again, Father, I want to praise and thank God for you, for your guild. And it was a pleasure to have you on the air today. And I'll tell you, I will tell Archbishop Charles that I had the privilege to talk with you today. And believe me, we'll continue to make her known as much as we can ourselves over the airwaves time to time, that hopefully she will get her cause opened.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate very much getting into a much wider area.
Yeah. And also, you know, hey, might get a bus trip to go up there and to really see up close and personal the history of this woman and who she was and how she lived her life. Such an inspirational life indeed. I want to thank you for your time. We were going to take a little station break today, as we always do at 5:30. And once again, Father, I want to praise and thank God for your yes to priesthood. 55 years a priest. God bless you.
Yes, God bless you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Have you ever heard of seed faith, the biblical law of sowing and reaping? Many people fail when it comes to faith for finances because they haven't planted any seed. Any farmer knows that if you want a good crop, you have to first sow the seed. The Bible speaks about seed right from the beginning in Genesis, and it's brought up all throughout the scriptures. In the second book of Corinthians, we are told that whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, but whoever sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Why not consider sowing your financial seed into In His Sign Catholic Radio, a ministry with a 30-year history? You should sow your financial seed into a ministry that produces good fruit. Luke tells us at chapter 6, verse 44, every tree is known by its fruit. You should sow your financial seeds where you're fed, be it here, your local parish, or other worthy ministries. Please prayerfully consider joining our monthly circle of family and friends by partnering with us financially each month. All donations are completely tax deductible and go directly to our daily expenses, like the purchase of radio airtime and keeping the lights on. Kathleen McCarthy and all of the staff at In His Sign, except Kathleen's administrator, donate all of their time and talent on a volunteer basis at no expense to the ministry. Donations to In His Sign Catholic Radio may be sent to 136 Garrett Avenue, Rosemont, PA 19010, or you can donate securely at inhissign.com. Remember, without your prayers and financial support, our mission voice will be silenced.
Oops. Well, praise the Lord. We are praising and thanking God for this beautiful gift of the apostolate of In His Sign Catholic Radio. And I just want to remind everybody once again, I don't know if you can get to confession tonight, if they have it in any of the parishes. There's been so many opportunities of churches being open all over, morning, afternoon, and the evening. But remember, you can always, believe me, you can knock on a door of a rectory, and I'm sure they would hear your confession if you've been away from the church and you really want to enter into Holy Week. So I would just encourage you, look around. If you have a computer, Google it. Go on the Archdiocese website. You can find out all the different churches. And try to take that opportunity. It makes everything so beautiful to enter into with a clear heart and a mind and being washed with grace after confession to enter in, particularly into the Triduum. Well, I was down at the rally today for the Little Sisters of the Poor, and it was held down at the cathedral. And upon showing up there, I saw Megan Coakley, a beautiful woman of God, a friend. Mm-hmm. And while I was there, I had the pleasure of asking someone to join us today. And that is Megan Schreiber. And she's a volunteer with Women Speak for Themselves. And I just said to her, I was delighted that she could come at such a short notice, because I just asked her when the prayer vigil dissipated, and she graciously said yes. So maybe we can talk a little bit about, we haven't heard anything yet about the decision. We're awaiting it patiently to come down for the case at the Supreme Court for hopefully in favor of the Little Sisters and the Poor. And we invited Megan to come join us. So tell our listeners a little bit about what took place today. Great. And why you wanted to be, were you part of this planning committee with Megan?
Great.
Share
great.
That.
Thanks for having me, Kathleen. The Women Speak for Themselves is a movement out of D.C. Talking about relevant issues such as religious freedom. And I was part of the planning of putting this together for the Little Sisters. And we're so blessed to have them in our community here serving the elderly poor. Their work is truly beautiful. And we really wanted to shed some light on the issue today for those who are really unaware of what is going on, mm-hmm. and to envelop their mission in prayer. And I think that's what we managed to accomplish today.
Yes, indeed, you really did. And you could see the enthusiasm that was, it really exuded out of you, the commitment, the sincere, complete sincerity of coming before the people and gathering them together, along with Megan. And of course, we were blessed. We had two of our shepherds there. We had Bishop Fitzgerald. I was at his Episcopate Mass when he was elevated to bishop, as well as Bishop John McIntyre, a wonderful That's friend and mm-hmm. a wonderful gift to this ministry. Mm-hmm. He comes in often. And we even had Father Dennis Gill come out with the seminarians, which was really nice. And of course, you know, you always are hoping and praying that there be so many people. Right. But I heard there were so many people that actually went to stand on the grounds of the Supreme Court.
That's right, in D.C.
Praying in D.C. and interceding along with our sisters. They were all there interceding and praying for a positive outcome, not only for them, but for all those involved in that case.
Right.
So tell us a little bit about that.
This is, we were very blessed to have over 19 locations doing this across the country. And of course, our largest turnout was in D.C.
Yeah.
And we have Helen Alvarez, who is going to be communicating to us the turnout of the oral arguments. So why today? Today right. was because the Supreme Court is hearing the oral arguments on the Little Sisters case. And this is such a critical point because this is true religious freedom in jeopardy,
yes.
right? If the Little Sisters of the Poor are subject to the government mandate, they'll be severely fined to the point that their operations will be diminished. And we have to remember that religious freedom is a bedrock of our country. And when a religious order is being denied their religious freedom, I think that's cause for concern for many people.
Absolutely. Yeah. Of all faith.
Of all faiths.
Absolutely. And I remember when we first did this, when this mandate first came out, we did a lot of programming on it. And, you know, one of the things, it's amazing that many government officials, they've opted, they're allowed to opt out of
That's
it.
Right. That's right.
The military, you know, many, many others, other different main groups
sure.
are allowed to opt out.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, here we are. We have this beautiful group of holy women who are standing firm in their faith and what they believe in their own religious freedom is being taken away.
Right.
And, I mean, it's cause for everybody to stand up because sooner or later they'll be knocking on everybody's
sure.
door.
And sure.
This is something that everybody should be praying for. We should, you know, gather as much as possible like these kind of events peacefully and be that support, be that witness of standing in the gap with the sisters. And so I'm delighted that you would be here today. What are some of the things that you find incongruent?
Mm, great.
Because mm-hmm. It's not a, like you were saying about the mandate. It has come to the sisters to be a dictate.
That's right.
Rather than a mandate.
That's right. That's right. And you bring up a real vital point, and that's the real story here,
yeah.
is that one third of Americans are already exempt
yeah.
from ExxonMobil to really the state of New York to our government's own military for their own reasons. So for the sisters to not have a basis of opting out for their religious beliefs, which is the whole reason they're in existence,
right.
is to serve in the religious capacity. It makes no sense at all.
Mm-hmm.
So we need voices that can stand up and that can pray and to shed some light on an issue that really does not make sense. And it's a bit frightening, because if we have the government deciding how religious a religious order can be, we've stepped on a very, very slippery slope.
And yeah, we certainly have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, when you look at it, so many years ago, 40-plus years ago, our Holy Father, okay, mm-hmm. Pope Paul VI, in his Humanae Vitae,
that's right.
Everything that he, I mean, he was a prophet in our own time.
That's right.
And everything he spoke about that would come in the future, that he literally prophesied about, mm-hmm. has come to pass. We are reaping what has been sown.
Sure.
And so I'm really interested too, Megan, for the group that you're volunteering with, mm-hmm. because my thing always is, where are the women?
That's right.
In
that's
these
right.
issues, where the heck are the women?
We're here.
So and that, tell us about your involvement right. with Women Speak for themselves.
Right. And that was a real genesis behind Helen Alvarez's movement in this.
Oh,
is just that. Where are the women? And we are out there, and we do believe in religious freedom, and there are many of us who want to stand up for the truth, not just in religious freedom, but also in the area of contraception.
Mm-hmm.
You know, women are being told that this is a matter of a health issue, right? There's no other state of health that doctors treat as a disease, right? I mean, it makes no sense.
Right.
So it's time that these intelligent women who really know this in their heart start to stand up and say, boy, that just doesn't seem right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of what Women Speak for Themselves is about, is mm-hmm. calling women who are willing to step out, who are willing to speak the truth on very, very important topics for all women, to be heard. And so this is why I love the movement, why I want to volunteer my time with the movement. And they're doing wonderful things for women. And I encourage everybody to learn more about them and support them. And they do just great work. So this issue with supporting the little sisters is a key point mm-hmm. for them. And again, religious freedom for of course, we're speaking about Catholic entity, but there are far-reaching consequences for all religions that should be greatly concerned that the government is deciding what defines their religion.
Right. I remember, you know, people of all faiths, governors, presidents of companies, you name it, they joined together and sent a letter
mm-hmm.
Stating that they are of one mind and one heart, because if we take away religious freedom, let's just say from the little sisters of the poor, for one of another,
right,
many different causes, if that happens, then eventually that will affect every Protestant, it'll affect every Muslim, every Jew, every mm-hmm. not just the Christians.
That's right.
And and I think that's a wonderful point that needs to be made, that a voice is finally being raised up
mm-hmm.
from women.
That's right.
I mean, this is about a woman's issue.
That's right. That's right.
You know.
And as we stood on those steps today at the Basilica, I couldn't help but think, you know, just a few blocks over, or several blocks over, is the Constitution Center.
Yeah.
And these wise men who established our country and put this as a constitutional right, we all should be concerned. We all should be concerned. And women especially, mm-hmm. right? Because, again, government is really kind of trying to tell us what a state of health is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I were in a situation where I couldn't conceive a child, my doctor would tell me I had a disease called infertility. Right. But yet on the flip side, the government's treating fertility like
as
it's a disease.
Right.
And it's heartbreaking for women who maybe aren't completely educated on what's going on and what they're mm-hmm. ingesting in their body. I mean, these are loads of chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have women that are concerned about GMOs in their diet,
that's
but they're
right.
not concerned about the contraceptives they're ingesting. So, and it's not because they don't want to know. It's they've been misguided.
Exactly.
And as another woman, I want to meet them in that, to really tell them the truth,
right.
Because it's only going to hurt them down the road. So again, with the religious freedom piece, we need to be the women out there. We need to be the voices out there to, you know, balance the mercy and justice, to speak the truth in a loving way, and to protect our country, really.
Yeah. Well, you know, Megan, one of the things, too, are you married?
Yes.
Do you have children?
Six
there
children.
You go.
I know, very blessed.
Yes. And I know as a mother of 12 children myself, I want my daughters to know the truth, you know. And I remember when the Humanae Vitae came forth, my children knew that.
Right.
And as they grew older, they knew more about it. And I think this is a type of situation that as a mother, and for all the mothers or, you know, women out there, or sisters, aunts, grandmothers, this is a time for you to have a voice. This is a time for you to get involved. This is a time of God calling you to say, this is an issue that needs to be addressed by the laity. And not only the hierarchy, not only Mother Church, but the laity, that we too have a responsibility. And you've taken that, you've owned that. And I think really, Women Speak for Themselves is an awesome organization. I think every man, woman, and young adult should learn what is the truth behind this, you know, taking away this religious freedom. What's the real story here?
Right, because
so many are being duped.
That's right. And the real story is that, you know, religious freedom is the bedrock of our country.
Absolutely.
And as soon as we break into denying that, most in particularly in a religious order, it really, those are red flags.
Yeah.
Everybody should take a step back. That's the real story here. Sometimes it gets sidelined with other topics, a referral about accommodation. There's an accommodation the government's offered for the sisters. Essentially, that accommodation says that the government will financially reimburse them. But this isn't about finances for the little sister. This is a faith issue. This is, this program offers drugs that induce abortion.
Right, abortifacients.
That's right. It's against our faith. And I have so much respect for the little sisters for stepping out. Yeah. They're a very quiet order. They're a beautiful order.
They are indeed.
We served, after our vigil today, we served in their home, in Holy Family Home. And, you know, I left saying, wow, this is where I want to be in my end stage. Now, I might not qualify, right, because of the circumstances. I have six children that, God willing, somebody will take care of me. But the beauty and the dignity, and this is the key point. These sisters don't serve Catholics, right? They serve the elderly poor.
Okay.
So the semantics in the language of the mandate basically says there's an exception for essentially churches. Churches that serve their own kind. So immediately a religious order like this is exempt because they're serving non-Catholics.
Exactly.
That again should be a red flag. When we are polarizing to that level, we're going to marginalize our society even more.
Well, you articulated that very well. And for all of us, you know, thinking about the Little Sisters of the Poor, and as you say, and now Father Doug McKay is one of my best friends. And I know what they do down there. You know, I've been down there, but he was their chaplain for so many years, 19 or 20 years. And stories that he would tell that nobody has any idea of the work they do.
Right.
You know, they know it's they have a house down there, but they don't know all the wonderful work. What a gift they are to this archdiocese.
That's right.
What a gift they are to the world. And so, you know, we stand lockstep with you and all those. And again, I speak to every man out there. Although this appears to be a woman's issue, men need to also learn how to own this true story of what this is really all about, to inform their own wives, you know, their daughters. And so I really give you kudos for stepping out in faith and being, you know, a mother of a family that says, I'm going to do something. I'm going to get involved. If other women, Megan, would like to get involved, how do they go about
that's
that?
That's great. Great question. They can visit the site, which is womenspeakforthemselves.com. And fill out some information, and we'll be in touch. I would encourage everybody to get on our mailing list. Mm-hmm. They'll receive updates on most critical points that are affecting women today. And, you know, I think that this is a really important movement, because sometimes we hear that term feminism, and I think, you know, we need to embrace our femininity.
Absolutely.
And the genius of our femininity, right. And the strength of our femininity. And that's what this movement's about.
Yeah. Well, if you're listening out there today and maybe something tweaked your heart, again, all you have to do is go to womenspeakforthemselves.com, mm-hmm. and click on and look around their website and see if you feel inclined. Take a step out in faith. Talking about taking a step out in faith, I know here, just my immediate time here, we were offered an opportunity to take another hour of radio time every day of the week. We're already on 5 to 6, and now we will be on 4 to 6. That was a great opportunity, but it's a great undertaking. And it's going to be a sacrifice to be able to finance all that, to be able to do the formatting and the programming and all the rest of it and getting the guest. It's a great opportunity, but it doesn't come without sacrifice. Mm-hmm. And this is what our country's built on, sacrifice.
That's right.
And, you know, I just felt, yes, Lord, I prayed about it, and then I called back and said, yes,
great.
We will take that. I'm going out in blind faith. And for you who are listening today, maybe it's a point in your life. You might not know the gifts and the talents you have lying dormant within you that you haven't even tapped into. You know, when the Lord baptized, when we were baptized, we were given the fullness of the Spirit with all the gifts. So each one of us have a lot of gifts lying dormant, and we don't know it until we get involved in volunteerism.
Sure.
And many times that's when the Lord, you know, blesses us to recognize gifts that we have that we didn't even know we have.
Sure.
So I want to encourage all you out there, step out. Step out in blind faith, mm-hmm. by saying, I'm doing this for the Lord. I'm going to do this for my family. I'm going to get involved. Because oftentimes, we look at everybody else, and we, like here, if, you know, people that are in the studio in there today could look at you and say, oh, I wish I could articulate that message as well as Megan did. I wish I could be a radio broadcaster. I wish this. But everybody's
That's
gifted.
Right. That's right.
And everybody's called.
That's right. I love that you say that, because I really, really encourage everyone is, and especially women who are really moved on issues, to have the courage, to just say, I'm interested in this. I don't really know what to do, but I believe in what you're doing. A year ago, I wouldn't necessarily think that I'd be standing on the steps of the Basilica. This is just something at on my heart.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's all it takes. I don't have an experience in speaking on the radio or doing any. I've been an at-home mom for a long time. Mm. But when the Lord moves through you and the Lord moves through your heart, I think of Jeremiah, he will give you the words to speak.
That's right.
And he will give you that. So I do, I echo that for you. And I encourage your listeners to, if they're having movement in their heart, to really listen to that. And their gifts will just be known as they
well
reach out.
In them.
That's right.
But we have to fan that flame, you know. We have to fan the fire, fan the flame of faith, so that it will well up within us, and that we can move and move in the fullness of God's Spirit, so that we can say without a doubt, I don't know what gifts I have. I don't know what I can offer, but I'm willing. And I think that's all any of us have to do, be willing to use the gifts that God has given to each one of us. We have a few minutes left, Megan. Is there anything specific on your own heart that you would like to share with our listening audience about what gave you a deeper conviction to get involved?
Mm-hmm.
Were you ironing? Oh, well, people don't iron anymore. Let's see. Were you doing something at home and you found out about women speak for themselves? How did that come about?
That's a great question. Been a fan of Helen Alvarez for
Me
some
too.
Time, and
Me
she's
too.
A friend. And she just does great work.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd sit there and think, wow, you know, gosh, this is great. you know, right. And not really move beyond that. We had a personal experience, surely, that we actually thought was a personal experience, mm-hmm. and it was brought in the center of media attention. And as I took a step back, I realized that it was an expression of religious freedom mm-hmm. that we were really being persecuted for. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that gave me pause to really think, you know, where are we in this country of ours where, you know, I can't make a personal decision of as to where I'm going to educate my children mm-hmm. or how we're going to move through in our faith and what we believe. And that was a big concern for me. And I was very familiar with their organization, and it was just doing a little bit more. I was invited down to train with them, with Kim Daniels and a couple other really great, Meg McDonald, some just great folks in right. D.C. that are doing beautiful things. And so it really kind of just, it was a right fit. We just, right. it took off. So it was really in a personal experience of having our religious freedom challenged that really opened up my heart to say, this is something we need to talk about.
Mm. So. Beautiful. So there you go. And we want to say to each and every one of you, we are all gifted, but you know, those gifts that we've been given, we're also called. So we're gifted, and then we're called. I always say God never calls any of us unless he intends to send us.
That's
and so I just want to encourage you. I think this is a really good organization. I don't really come out strong in a lot of different things that I'm not aware of. But once this came to my attention, I like to support it in any way that I can.
Thank you.
So try to give it a broader outreach, and hoping that you and your friends, you know, maybe you've been doing a Bible study. Maybe you've been doing a prayer group. Maybe you have a mother's club. There's so many women that you can right off the bat say, hey, I'm thinking about this. Would you like to join me? Because remember, Jesus sent us out two by two. Okay, discipleship two by two. He sent his own apostles out. He sent his disciples out. And so this is a great time if you have these opportunities. Maybe somebody at church, a coffee clutch, whatever. You don't have to step out alone. Ask somebody to join you. And again, I'm speaking to Megan Scheiber, and she's a volunteer with Women Speak for Themselves, a great organization. And please think more about it. Go to the website, womenspeakforthemselves.com. Take a look around, and then do something about it. Well, my brothers and sisters, we have come to the end of the hour. I want to share real briefly. I spoke yesterday. I'm going to try to get this in about the readings, and expounded on the readings yesterday about Peter and Judas. And, you know, the Lord knew Peter's heart, and he knew Judas's heart. And I explained how they both came from a different place. One received, he was so repentant, he received God's mercy. And the other refused to turn to God for mercy because he thought his sin was greater than God's mercy. And one of the things I said was when Peter used the words, Lord, I would die for you. I would lay down my life for you. And what does Jesus say? You will, Peter, huh? You will lay down your life for me. But a beautiful friend of mine, one of my dearest friends, a beautiful woman of God herself, the chancellor from up there in Harrisburg, Carol called me on the phone and she said, you know, he really did lay down his life for Christ. He really did die for him later on, but he did it and the Lord knew he would. So my brothers and sisters, remember, we all have decisions to make day in and day out. I ask you to continue to be a voice for those who have no voice. I ask you to continue to turn to God in this beautiful Jubilee year of mercy. My brothers and sisters, if you're listening today and you're away from the church, come on home. We're not complete without you, and you are missed. Till we meet again, may Jesus hold us close to his sacred heart. May our Holy Mother Mary place her mantle over each and every one of us, not only us, but our whole household. God willing, we'll see you soon again. God bless.